Thank you. Yeah, my last name's Svoboda. It's very hard to say. It's from the Czech Republic. So my grandparents came from Czechoslovakia, and my dad is grew up here all his life, but from Chicago. And there's a lot of Svobodas in Chicago, but nowhere else. And the last name Svoboda means liberty or freedom. And nobody knows how to spell it. Hardly anybody knows how to pronounce it. And so my dad, when he used to order pizza on the phone, they would say, "What's the name?" And he would say, "Svoboda." They would say, "What?" And he would say, "Svoboda." He would say, "What?" He would say, "Liberty." And then they would get right down liberty. So that was it. Anyway, it's good to be with you this morning. And it's always a joy to come to your church. And we want to thank you so much for your ongoing support of YWAM here in San Francisco. And we'd love for you to come down anytime to the Tenderloin and visit us. We're engaging the neighborhood in many different ways. We have a drop-in center. One of our big operations is just a drop-in center where we let people come in and hang out. We have showers, we have haircuts, we have Bible studies, we have art therapy, we do mail services for them, referral services, all different things, sometimes foot washing. And there's always people in our building just hanging out. We have movie days in the afternoon and all different things that are going on. And it's a great way to make friendship with people on the street and then to share the love of Jesus with them. So we'd love you to come down on Friday nights. Every Friday night, we go out and we serve hot chocolate on the streets of the Tenderloin. And we just walk up to people that are sitting on the streets and we ask them, "Would you like a cup of hot chocolate?" And we rarely get anyone that says, "No, get out of here. We don't want your hot chocolate." They look forward to the hot chocolate. And then we ask them, "Tell us your story." And they tell us their story. And then we ask them, "Is there anything we can pray for you for?" And then we engage with them. And sometimes all we do in that 1 hour is sit with one person the whole time. And we've given out one cup of hot chocolate. And we've had deep conversations with them. So we'd love you to come every Thursday afternoon. We have a food pantry program that serves 300 families in the Tenderloin. It's the second largest food pantry in San Francisco. And some of you have come down and helped us in that. And we appreciate that and would love to get any ongoing help. It's a huge effort, but a great way to engage with people. And not just people from the street, but a lot of the immigrant families that are down the Tenderloin from Russia, from Vietnam, from Nepal, from Pakistan, from China, from Vietnam, and different places are coming into that food pantry. This morning, I want to share with you the scripture verse that's on your bulletin. Matthew chapter 16 says, "Simon Peter replied, 'You are the Christ, the Son of the living God.' And Jesus answered him, 'Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail.'" God is building his church, and he's been building his church ever since the very foundations of San Francisco. One of the roles of a Christian disciple is to love the people and the place where God has put us. And sometimes that's hard to do. It's loving the people at our work. It's loving the place where we live. And in order to love it, we've got to get to know it. And sometimes we're so busy doing what we do that we don't take the time to listen to the past and to understand the present that gives us vision to understand the future. And this morning, I want to take you through a little bit of history of San Francisco churches. I'm not a historian, but I like to understand what makes up this beautiful city we call San Francisco. To study San Francisco, you can look at it through the arts. You can look at it through sports. You can look at it through the streets. You can look at it through the ethnicities. You can look at it through the 4,500 restaurants that we have in San Francisco. You can look at it through the 1,000 200 murals that we have in our city. You can look at it through the over 1,000 coffee shops in San Francisco. One of the ways that I fall in love with San Francisco is looking at it through the multiple churches that are in our city and religious institutions. The more you understand something, the more you begin to fall in love with it. So I'm going to take you through a little bit of history. And one of the reasons I want to do that is I want us to learn about the pioneers of the past who are part of the present. Secondly, to understand their stories and battles they fought to establish what we have today. And then third, to be encouraged that Jesus will build his church and that the gates of hell will not prevail. So this is not a typical Sunday morning sermon that I'm giving to you, because I'm going to go through a lot of information. It'll be kind of like drinking out of a fire hydrant. Get ready, and I'm going to give some information. And then in the Sunday school class, we want to kind of dialogue a little bit more about it as to what does it mean of all these things that we're talking about. But the biggest reason why I'm sharing with you this morning is you cannot love what you do not know. To fall in love with your spouse means you have to understand their history. You have to understand their idiosyncrasies. You have to understand their personality. You have to understand their DNA. You have to understand their quirkiness. Falling in love with San Francisco is the same thing. And San Francisco's got a lot of quirkiness to it. And the more we understand it, where did it come from? The more we begin to pray for it, the more we begin to engage it, and then the more we can begin to minister to it. So my goal this morning is not just to give you a bunch of information, but hopefully that you begin to love San Francisco more, the church in San Francisco better. That will lead you to engage the city, your neighbors, and your workplace with deeper transformational impact. You cannot love what you do not know. I'm taking the information this morning, if you're curious where I'm pulling all this from, some of these different books. One is called Mud, Blood, and Gold. You can get it on Amazon. The whole book is on 1849, just 1 year of San Francisco. And it really goes deep into some of the incredible stories of that time. The other one is there is Sacred Places of San Francisco. It's in the library. I don't know if you can get it on Amazon anymore. But it's an old book that has compiled a lot of the history. And the other one up there that I'll just say and I'll move on is God's Forever Family, which is documents the Jesus movement that went on in the 1960s that I'll talk about more towards the end. But just to give some background of San Francisco before I start plunging into church history, in 1846, San Francisco had just 300 people. It was a small little city, not even a city, a small little village, outpost on the West Coast. By 1849, it boomed to 2,000 because in 1849, gold was discovered. All right. By the end of that same year, there were 25,000 people. 700 ships came in 1849 from all over the world because of the gold discovery that was going on. And that had major implications for the church. The hallmark of the gold rush was greed. It was every man for himself. And that was the creed. And SF was a transient town. Is there any difference today? The hallmark of San Francisco today continues to be greed. And it's a tremendously transitional city where people only stay for a short time. And then they move on, and that has major implications for the church. San Francisco was a city peopled by men alone. Men outnumbered women 70-1 in 1849. And so that had major implications of what began to take place with brothels and gambling and homosexuality and other things that we still deal with in the present time. Historians said there were several churches in San Francisco, but more go to the card game than they do to the church on Sunday morning. San Francisco was proclaimed the wickedest town in the USA from 1849 to 1920, and not much has changed either since that time when it was proclaimed. Of the 300 women that were in San Francisco in 1849, 200 of them were prostitutes. And so that kind of tells you a little bit about the background of our city. By the end of 1849, there were perhaps hundreds of gambling houses with saloons attached. Gambling was a 24/7 business. $20,000 could change hands on the turn of a card in 1849. Now, in 1849, $1 was worth $30 in today's money. So $20,000 in today's money back then was $600,000 on the turn of a card. So just think about what that meant here in San Francisco with the challenges and the greed that was going on. A secondhand Webster's dictionary would sell for $25. A dozen eggs went for $6 to $9 in today's prices. That's $180. So we're better off today than we were in 1849, all right? So just think about what's going on here in San Francisco. People made money not just from the gold, but they made money off of the people that were digging gold. So implements to hardware stores and selling shovels and selling all different equipment made San Francisco a very, very rich city from what was going on. Suicide was the second leading cause of death in San Francisco back in that time. And why was it such a huge problem? Because people that came here to find gold maybe didn't find their fortune. And so then they committed suicide. Is there any difference what's going on today? People come here to find their fortune, whether it's in tech or whether it's in being an entrepreneur or whether it's in being an artist or whether it's being a performer, and they fail, and then depression starts setting in. And again, how do we see these things from the eyes of Christ and from the eyes of the church? All right, so a little bit of background. Before 1849 and 1851, San Francisco was almost destroyed by fire 7 times. All right, so San Francisco was all wood buildings, and fires would break out, and the city would burn down. Our city bird is what? The phoenix. Why do we have the phoenix as a city bird? It rises from the ashes, all right? So Pastor Jack, when he prayed this morning and read the scripture to us, he said, those of us in the West, we have a mentality of a can-do-it mentality. Well, San Francisco is very strong with that can-do-it mentality. There's a positive side to that, but there's also a very negative side to that. All right, San Francisco has burned to the ground 7 times, and each time it kept on being rebuilt. The Azusa Revival started in Los Angeles. The great Azusa Revival in 1906 started on April 9th, 1906, and the great earthquake and fire took place in San Francisco on April 18th of that very same year. All right? Now, it's interesting. There was a preacher down in Los Angeles at the Azusa Revival a couple weeks before the earthquake broke out here in San Francisco. And he got up in the pulpit and he said, something remarkable is going to happen in a few days' time that will stun the whole world. And then the earthquake took place in San Francisco. Only a few people were gathered at the Azusa Revival when he said that. And after he said that and after the earthquake took place, the crowds at the Azusa Revival went up into the thousands. All right. The East Coast newspapers were publishing headlines after the earthquake, and they said, San Francisco, Sin City gets its just reward. All right. A lot of people said God visited Los Angeles with revival, and he visited San Francisco with judgment. Now, San Francisco wasn't very happy with that statement. They became quite angry. with that statement because they were very proud and had that can-do-it attitude. How dare you strike us? We will rise from the ground and come back. And most of the buildings in the downtown area, if not all of them, were destroyed. There was one building in particular that didn't go down. It was called Hotling's Whiskey. And if you go to Hotling's Whiskey today, there's still a plaque on the building, and this is what it says. It says, if, as they say, God spanked the town for being over frisky, why did he burn his churches down and spare Hotling's Whiskey? So this is the attitude of San Franciscans that still prevails in the city today. As we learn to love this city, and we learn to engage this city, and we learn to speak to this city, and we learn to minister to it with God's love, all right? So it's important to understand that some of these trends that we see in San Francisco come from a long time. So now jumping ahead into some of the history, the first instance of churches in San Francisco, Sir Francis Drake landed 30 miles north of San Francisco in 1579. His ship's chaplain, Francis Fletcher, conducted a service in English on St. John's the Baptist Day, which was the first known English Protestant service on the continent and the first use of the Book of Common Prayer. So this cross, you can find it in Golden Gate Park, and it commemorates the very first service in the San Francisco Bay Area, not in the city, but on way on the northern side on the outskirts. Founded in October 9th, 1776, y'all know Dolores Church in the Mission. The settlement was named for St. Francis of Assisi, but was discovered on the Friday of Sorrows before Palm Sunday in the Lent season. So the name Mission Dolores stuck, and the creek nearby was named the Creek of Sorrows. All right, so Mission Dolores means the place of sorrows, and because of the history that was there. So this was the first church, a Catholic settlement that came into San Francisco back in 1776. June 7th, 1846, John B. Montgomery, we all know Montgomery Street in San Francisco, named after John B. Montgomery, a Protestant elder, landed in San Francisco holding church services on his ship. Next, Samuel Brannan, we all know Brannan Avenue in San Francisco, arrived July 1846 with 233 members of the Latter-day Saints, doubling the population of the city, and the city becoming, moving from a Catholic city to a Latter-day Saint city. All right. The first Protestant church was on Powell Street. So you can see it here. The first church was on Powell Street at Washington. Services were held in a shanty before this church was there with a blue cover by Methodist preachers Asa White and William Roberts. So then they built this church kind of in the bushes, which was kind of out in the outlands of San Francisco. Back in that time, and Asa White and William Roberts were the first preachers. They used to hold their services before they did in the shanty in some of the hotels in downtown San Francisco, and the hotels were filled with card games and dancing and billiards, which was seen as a wicked game back in that time. And they would hold their services, and there would be sailors in there. There would be all different types of gold rush people. And it was a very, very rough and rowdy atmosphere. And they would hold their services while everybody was doing their other business. And few would attend. And that was what it was like back in San Francisco. They were pioneers who pushed forward in what they did. William Taylor was a great bishop here in San Francisco. He pastored the church on Powell and Washington, the one you just saw. He preached on the streets of San Francisco for 7 years. There's a book in the San Francisco archives up on the sixth floor called 7 Years of Street Preaching, and it's all his sermons back from 1849. You can't check it out, but you can sit there and read it because it's one of those old ancient books. And William Taylor was a barrel-chested, baritone voice man. And when the ships would come into San Francisco, he would go out onto the pier and he would sing at the top of his lungs as the ships came in. And as they docked, he would begin to preach the gospel. In Portsmouth Square, he used to set up and preach in the square. And he would stand on whiskey barrels, and he would sing at the top of his lungs. And all the brothels and gambling halls surrounding the square, with customers going in and out, the proprietors would get so mad at him, they would come out and they would say, "Bishop Taylor, stop your preaching! You're blocking the entrances to our shops." And he would roar back in a baritone voice. He would say, "The only entrance I'm blocking is the entrance to hell." And he would keep on preaching the gospel in the square. So he was a very powerful preacher. He preached more than 600 sermons standing on boxes, whiskey barrels, ship decks, and once on top of a bar. So he was a very famous man with an incredible story. This was his church. That's located on Larkin at Clay. It's no longer there. Just in the last couple of years, it was torn down. It was a dilapidated building with a lot of homeless people around it, and neighbors got upset. And so they tore it down, and they built new condominiums around it. So a lot of our old church history is slowly disappearing. This is another church that is in Dolores Park. This is the Golden Gate Lutheran Church at 601 Dolores. It's still there, but it was damaged in the 1989 earthquake and has been bought and totally redone as a private residence. So some of our churches like this, we're losing them. This is another one, another church, Second Church of Christ Scientist, also got damaged in the 1989 earthquake. And again, bought by the same guy that bought the previous church I just showed you and made it again into another private residence. So a lot of these churches we're beginning to lose. This is St. Brigid's on Broadway and Van Ness. And again, this one got destroyed got unsafe after the 1989 earthquake. And the Academy of the Arts has purchased it and refurbished it. And now it's a art classroom. So a lot of these churches, we're slowly losing them. This is the St. Gethsemane's. This is in Hayes Valley. And this church just sold in the last year, I think, or 2 years, and it sold for $3 million. And again, it's being made into a private residence here in the city. So this was mainly an African-American church. Our African-American population has gone down from probably 15% to now somewhere under 3% here in the city because the cost of living has become so high and people have moved out. So we're losing that population, and churches are changing, and makes us try to think, what does that mean for us as a church? How do we adapt to the changing times and the challenges that are going on? This is, before I show you the next church, this is Reverend Joseph Bueller. He was a pioneer of the Lutheran churches here in San Francisco. When he came out in the 1850s, he pioneered Lutheranism here in San Francisco. There was already a Lutheran church here, St. Mark's. Some of you know St. Mark's on Cathedral Hill. And that was pastored by Pastor Moonshake was his name. And he was about as shifty as the moon. He came out to seek gold. He was a gold rush person before he was a pastor. He failed in finding gold, and so he turned to the ministry. And he was not very honest. And so when Pastor Bueller came and saw the church, he looked at the church and he said, there's only free thinkers and rationalists inside of his church, and nobody is really a follower of Jesus. And he started preaching the gospel, and he caused such a commotion amongst the people that when he went on tour to Europe, the church split and kicked him out. And he came back and he said, "How dare you kick me out?" And he stood in the pulpit. He kept on preaching. But he finally had to leave. And he left and started this church, St. Paul's Church, beautiful church on Goff and Eddy, which is no longer there. But he started this church on Goff and Eddy. It's just an empty plot right now. And he preached in that church and built a very strong congregation. And it survived the 1906 earthquake, but later on it caught fire. During the 1906 earthquake, let me just back up, to the 1906 earthquake, the fire was moving towards the church, and they were going to dynamite it. The fire department wanted to dynamite the church to cause a firebreaker so that the fire wouldn't spread anymore westward. And the congregation pleaded with the fire department, "Please don't blow up our church." But they came with dynamite to blow it up. And they said, "Please just check the fire hydrant one more time and see if there's water in there." And they checked the fire hydrant, and water came into the fire hydrant. And so they were able to spray the church down and save it. So they kept the church. But then years later, many years later, it did catch fire. And it burned down. So we lost that church. St. Paul's is still in operation today, but they don't have a building. They have an empty plot, and they are building, hopefully in the next year or two, they're going to be rebuilding the church on the same site. So a lot of these churches that we see, this is St. Joseph's, just where I live. This is on 10th and Mission. This was also destroyed in the 1989 earthquake, or made unsafe, has just been rebought and reconditioned completely inside and outside, and is now it's an art society called St. Joseph's Art Society. So it's no longer a church. It's been closed down, but just reopened just in the last year. As a arts. This is another church in the city. Most of you don't know that this is a church. This is called the Lost Cathedral of the Tenderloin. And I'll just tell you the story of this really quickly. This was built in honor of the barrel-chested baritone singer Bishop William Taylor in the 1920s. So the four Methodist churches gathered together, and they said, "Let's build a mega Methodist church in San Francisco on the bottom floor. And on the top, everything above will be a hotel, and we'll support the church financially." So if you look at the bottom, it's a little bit dark, but if you look at the bottom, you can see the cathedral-shaped windows that are down there at the bottom. Most people don't realize this. This is on Leavenworth and McAllister in the Tenderloin, right by the Civic Center, right by the, Civic Center Plaza. It's right by the mayor's office downtown. So they built this church with the hotel to support the church. And then the Great Depression came, and they lost all their money, and they had to abandon their project while the building was being built, and it was almost completed, and they went bankrupt. And a hotel came along and bought the building from the Methodist Church, or from bankruptcy, took it out of bankruptcy and reclaimed the building. And they were scratching their heads as how to make it successful. And they knew the only way to make it successful was to put a bar that would sell liquor and would attract customers. But back in the day, there was a law. You could not have a liquor store within 200 feet of a church building. There were still some people coming to the small services inside the building from the Methodist Church. So they thought, well, how are we going to sell our liquor? And they looked up, and they thought, well, let's put the liquor store on the top of the building. That's 200 feet away. And so it became a famous liquor bar room called the Sky Room, that made the hotel become very, very successful. When the other hotel was built on top of Knob Hill, I think it's the Hopkins Hotel, they built a sky room up there, and they put them out of business. The IRS took over the building. Well, first the military took over the building as a draft center, and then the IRS took it over, and they converted the whole building into utilitarian offices. And in the sanctuary on the bottom floor, the beautiful vaulted church ceiling, they put a drop ceiling in it and made it a ugly IRS office. And just recently, UC Hastings bought the building, and nobody actually knew there was a church on the inside. And they started tearing down the ceiling, and they recognized, oh my goodness, there's a beautiful church inside of this building. So we now call it the Lost Cathedral of the Tenderloin. But it's not, again, becoming a church. It's becoming a study hall for law students at UC Hastings Law College. All right. This is Reverend Osgood Wheeler. He's the pastor that came over, was commissioned to come over by the Baptists. And when he was sent out, they said to him, "Do you know where you are going, my brother? I would rather go as a missionary to China than to San Francisco. Don't you stir a step unless you are prepared to go to the darkest spot on the face of the earth." And Wheeler got on a boat, and he sailed to San Francisco, and he came in the heat of the gold rush where the city was booming, and he became the Baptist preacher, and he started this church, First Baptist, on Washington near Stockton, and the roof was a sail from one of the old ships that he took off of the ship, and he put it on the top, and that was their roof. And then they moved over to Eddy Street by Jones, right in the Tenderloin. No longer, this building is no longer there. This was destroyed in the 1906 earthquake, but this is what it looked like. And he was the first Protestant minister in California. He preached the first Protestant sermon in San Francisco. He built the first meeting house. He started the first Sunday school. He delivered the first 4th of July oration in San Francisco. He arrived on the first steamer. He was the editor of the first religious newspaper. And no wonder it's called First Baptist Church. So this is the church that is named after or came out of Wheeler, which is on Gulf and Market, and it's still there today, thriving and very successful here in the city of San Francisco. So gives you a little history on that church. And then this is Trinity on Gulf and Bush, Trinity St. Peter's Episcopal Church, was pastored by a man called Reverend Flavel Scott Mines. And he said at the church dedication, 1851, and I think this is still a prophetic word that's still yet to come true and is coming true more and more in the city of San Francisco. He said, "Let San Francisco become another Antioch, mother city of churches." Antioch, as you know, was a multi-ethnic church. It had people from all the different ethnicities at that time. They had a multi-ethnic leadership team, and that church was sending out missionaries to reach throughout the province of Asia during that time. And I think that's still a prophetic word for us here in the city of San Francisco, which was uttered back in 1851. First Congregational Church was destroyed in the 1906 earthquake at California and DuPont Streets, and then they took on this church here. It was damaged in 1989 earthquake, and it was sold to the Academy of the Arts at Post and Mason Streets. It was called a church with a heart in the heart of the city. And so it was pastored by Pastor Dwight Hunt, Timothy Dwight Hunt, I'm sorry. And he was San Francisco's first and only city chaplain. He was a missionary in Hawaii, and his whole congregation left him to go to San Francisco to find gold. And so he followed him over. He followed his congregation over here and pastored them while they dug for gold, and then started this church on Post and Mason. After the earthquake, it was destroyed, and they built a new building, which you can see today at 1323 Polk Street. and that's their present-day building that's still going on here in the city. And then a few more here, the Unitarian Universalist Church. I don't know if you've ever been inside of this church. Now, I'm not talking about Christian churches, but talking about other religions. The Unitarian Universalist Church, beautiful church on the inside, was pastored by Thomas Starr King, who was a very, very famous man here in San Francisco. He fought during the Civil War. California had to decide two things: whether to stay in the United States and whether to be a slave state or a free state. And Thomas Starr King was an excellent, convincing preacher, and he spoke throughout California in favor of California staying in the United States and to be a free state. And he was successful on both issues. So he was a very powerful man. He was a very small man. He was a very tiny man, 120 pounds or so, and he was beardless. He had a boyish face. And when he first arrived at the Unitarian Universalist Church, people were mumbling, what can this little man do for us? And he got up in the pulpit. He said, though I weigh only 120 pounds, when I am mad, I weigh a ton. And so Thomas Starr King became a very famous man in San Francisco. This is a Swedenborgian church. How many of you know the Swedenborgian church? This is one of our old churches up in Pacific Heights. Beautiful church, historic church. If you walk into the front of the building, you walk through a Japanese tea garden, and then you go inside, and everything is natural on the inside and beautiful. And then, of course, other religions began to swamp into San Francisco. Swami Vivekananda started the Vedanta Society, which you can find up in Pacific Heights at Filbert and Webster. This was the house that he started. It's still there here in the city. Swami Vivekananda went to the Chicago Parliament of Religions back in the late 1800s, and that's where he propagated that all religions are the same. And, of course, that became a very strong feature here in San Francisco. And then a few of our other great leaders in San Francisco, as I just slowly come more and more to the end here. Donaldina Cameron, of course, I think most of you know about her story. She was an incredible pioneer who responded to the cry of the poor, especially the young Chinese girls who were sold into prostitution that were being brought over from China as maids, but they were actually prostitutes. And she became an expert at finding them trapped inside of the homes of men here in San Francisco, and she rescued them. She literally broke the back of slavery in San Francisco. She was known by the Chinese men, or she was named by the Chinese men in the city as the White Devil. And the girls named her our affectionate old mother. She cared for them. She fought for them. She worked. She came only for a year to serve in San Francisco, and she stayed here for her lifetime. She was burned out during the 1906 earthquake. The building was on fire. And all the documents of the women that she had rescued were in that building. And she knew that if those documents burned, that she would lose them. And against the fire department's protection, she ran into the building. And she saved all the documents. And she came out, and the building burned down. They took the burnt bricks of that building, and they rebuilt the present building that we see today. So if you haven't been there, it's a great thing to visit. William Spear, another great missionary in San Francisco. He founded the Presbyterian Church of Chinatown. He started a bilingual newspaper called The Oriental. He opened a dispensary and on and on. You can see the church down in Chinatown. So tremendous work. By 1880, the city's population was 234,000 people and had 100 churches. By 1900, there were 343,000 people and 175 churches. By 1890, there were 26,000 Chinese, and by 1892, there were 15 Chinese temples. The Japanese Gospel Society started in 1877. So a few things. And then as we move more into the modern day Glad Tidings Assembly, That's on West Webster and Ellis Streets. Has been a major place of revival in the city. It started in 1913. Smith Wigglesworth visited the church, a famous preacher, a very controversial preacher with a healing ministry. The church has had a lot of incredible experiences and continues to be that type of a church even today. And then the Jesus People movement that came into San Francisco, 1967. We just finished a couple years ago our 50-year celebrations here in San Francisco of the Summer of Love. And 1967 was a radical time in San Francisco, and 75,000 young people flooded into the city to find peace and to find love and to experiment with drugs and free sex and music. And out of that came so many things, Santana and Creedence Clearwater Revival and Jefferson Airplane and Jimi Hendrix and all that music that came from the San Francisco scene. And it was started out of the First Baptist Church, Mill Valley, in 1965 with Ted Wise as a hippie convert, and Pastor John McDonald considered a square. And the two began to disciple one another. They were the odd couple. And they began to meet together and try to understand each other's thinking of how do we reach these young people that are flooding into San Francisco. They were brought together at First Baptist Church in San Francisco down in the basement. And they formed the Evangelical Concerns. And they leased the Armenian Hall on Page Street. And they opened what was called the Living Room. And the Living Room was a drop-in center for hippies in the Haight-Ashbury. And at least 20 people, I think it was 20 people a day or 20 people a week, were giving their lives, 20 people per week were giving their lives to Jesus in that place. And one of the men that came, that often visited that place, that never gave his life to the Lord, but he would come to that drop-in center. You will remember him. His name was Charles Manson. And so Manson used to drop into that drop-in center, but he never gave his life to Jesus. And records back in the history show that when people looked at him, they knew something was really, really wrong with Charles Manson. But he would come to that. There was another man that came into that drop-in center. His name was Lonnie Frisbee. He looked like Jesus. And Lonnie Frisbee was a hippie. And he was in Tuckwitz Falls down south in California. And he was crying out to want to find God. Where is God? And he went up into the canyon. And he was on LSD acid. And he said, God, if you're really there, show me that you're there. And he had a vision. And in that vision, he saw thousands of young people coming to Jesus Christ. He came down from that Tuckwitz Falls, and he came to San Francisco. And he was on Stanyan and Haight Streets right by the Golden Gate Park. And he was preaching on the corner. And he was preaching about flying saucers, Christ consciousness, and the return of Jesus Christ. And Ted Wise and the people from the Living Room listened to him. And they said, well, he's a little bit off, but he certainly has a good heart. So they brought him into the Living Room, and they began to disciple him. And Lonnie Frisbee, out of that Living Room, he began to preach in San Francisco, Santa Cruz, Santa Barbara, all the way down the West Coast. And literally thousands and thousands and thousands of young people began to turn to Jesus Christ. It was the beginning of the Jesus movement, and it was this man right here, Lonnie Frisbee. Very unorthodox, but he was in love with Jesus. And he began to preach all over the West Coast, and people began to turn to Jesus. And, of course, we come to your church, Golden Gate Christian Reformed Church. And a little story about your church there. Reverend and Mrs. Peter Yang started the church in August 1965. They held the first service in their living room with just 16 people. And then the church moved to two other locations, including 18th Avenue YMCA, just next door, and the 25th Avenue house. And then in 1984, the church moved into this present location. And I read this on your website. It was really beautiful. It said, a highlight of the celebration was Mayor Dianne Feinstein's declaration of April 22nd, 1984, as Golden Gate Christian Reform Church Day. One of the reasons for this honor is the church's active outreach community program, that included the School for Developmentally Disabled, the after-school program, the Chinese school, and Agape Land. Isn't that beautiful? And I love your mission statement. We are a bridge leading people to Christ. All right? So this gives you a little bit of the overview of San Francisco. Today, there's approximately 282 evangelical churches in the city, 93 mainline churches, 54 Roman Catholic churches, 27 uncategorized churches. I'm not sure. I think they're just kind of whatever they are. And 17 Orthodox churches and 28 other churches that either don't fit in the previous categories. We can't figure out what they are. They're just very free thinking. 56 Buddhist temples, 17 synagogues, 5 Hindu temples, 5 mosques, 4 interfaith centers, 1 Shinto temple, 1 Baha'i temple, and that's as December 31st, 2011. So there may be more or less now, but that's about as accurate as we can get. So that gives you a little overview. And Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail. So I'm going to close this morning, but we're going to end the Sunday school. I want to look at a few myths of what this all means and understand what is our response to these myths that have come out over time, and how do we respond to these myths, and what does it mean for us here at Golden Gate Christian Reformed Church, and how can we go forward in the next 10 years to be the church that God wants us to be, to continue to serve our city with God's love. Amen? Amen. Thank you very much.